Good afternoon, Patriots. This is Matt Shea, and welcome to Patriot Radio, broadcasting live from the capital of free Washington, Spokane Valley, deep in the heart of God's country in the American Readout, and the legacy of Dr. Stan Monteith, bringing you the story behind the story and the news behind the news. And once again, this is the year we wake up and take our freedom back, because our hope is not in man but in Jesus Christ, and we can't end in prayer. We must also move to action. And as James 4:17 admonishes us, to one who knows the right thing to do and does not do it, to him it is sin. And it seems like that is the theme for Washington, D.C. and Olympia over the last year at least. Now from the front, your daily intelligence briefing on the international front. Russia continues to press the attack in Syria. And interestingly enough, today there was a U.S. Special Forces raid to free some ISIS hostages in Iraq, just near Tikrit. And it was successful, although we did lose, unfortunately, one soldier. In that raid, they freed, I think, 70-plus hostages. And it's like there is an attempt to regain U.S. influence in the region as Russia continues to dominate in that area of the world. And some people are calling now the leader of the free world, if you can believe that. They're calling Russia and Putin the leader of the free world. Well, also, and a little bit unnoticed in the news, China and their inclusion in the SDR, that's the strategic drawing rights, that's the basket of currencies, the closest thing we have to an international currency today. The United States has given its blessing, and it is silently moving forward, and it is expected to take place sometime in 2016. Now, it was supposed to be announced in October, but in August, there was an announcement from the IMF to postpone it a year. And then the Chinese devalued their currency. So you kind of think there might be an agenda there? I don't know. But the very clear thing for the United States is, if China is included, if the renminbi and the yuan are included in the strategic drawing rights, in that basket of currencies, first country in 20-some years for that to happen, that means U.S. currency values will continue to go down. On top of the fact that Saudi oil prices are driving the fracking industry in the United States to the brink. Now, that's what's going on internationally. The Saudis are pumping massively to drive the oil prices down to break the back of the fracking industry in the United States. And why do they want to do that? Because the U.S., if it can produce its own oil like we are and become one of the largest, if not the largest producer of oil, natural gas in the whole world, we don't need the Middle East anymore. And more importantly, Europe doesn't need Russia. And, oh, by the way, in Kharkiv, a little bit north of Kharkiv in Ukraine, that's the largest city in the east of Ukraine, kind of like the Spokane of Ukraine, if you will, they've discovered natural gas deposits, and they could use fracking technology there, and then Europe definitely wouldn't need the Russians. So do you think there's a reason they're invading that part of Ukraine? Clearly there is. And, oh, by the way, on top of that, this week, a Yale study came out and said fracking is not harmful to the environment. Now, there's a lot of people that have taken umbrage with that. But every time we drill down, no pun intended, into the issue, we discover that the contamination that is occurring, if it is occurring at all, is always surface contamination. It's not fracking itself 6,000 feet underground. And you got to understand, this is a geostrategic resource we have and technology we have that completely turned things on its head. And one of the reasons our economy is still kind of floating barely with its head above water. So we need to keep that stuff in mind as we look at this issue. Also on the international front, massive unrest continues in Europe. Refugees, massive crime rate increases, 70% men coming across into Europe as part of this refugee onslaught that's occurring. Hungary, and now Hungary is, I think, the only nation in Europe that actually recognizes Christianity as the official religion in its constitution, put up a wall, literally a fence, to keep out these immigrants coming across the border. And so now they're trying to go through Slovenia. And Slovenia's got some interesting topography, because there's a pass that goes into Slovenia. And during the breakup of Yugoslavia, where Bosnia, Croatia, Serbia, and Slovenia broke off, The Slovenian army literally held the Serbs out in that pass, in those mountains. And that's where things are happening right now. And literally, there's huge refugee camps there that are beginning to set up. Be interesting to see if they put up a fence as well. On the national front, Hillary Clinton's whole deal with Benghazi just gets weirder and weirder by the day. It has now come out officially today that they had another movie in mind. Now, we all heard about this non-existent, nobody-watched movie that they pinned the blame on for the Benghazi crisis, right? That's what the riots started, etc. It was on this nondescript movie, and this filmmaker got put in jail for it. But it came out today. They had considered another movie to try to pin the blame on, and it was actually a movie by a very popular Calvary Chapel pastor, John Corson, God versus the Law. So this was an agenda from the beginning. I mean, you want to talk about corruption. You want to talk about 1984 Orwell type stuff. Here we have literally they get caught deciding on what to put in the blame on, even though they know at the beginning that's not what's to blame. But they decided against the popular Calvary Chapel Christian pastor and on this nondescript guy that nobody really had ever heard of to try to pin it on him. And she's running for president of the United States. Folks, she should be in jail. She should be in jail. And somebody sent me a picture yesterday, had Edward Snowden on it, said he divulged national security secrets publicly. And Hillary Clinton did it privately. You know, what's the difference? Very, very curious that she is continuing to skate around this whole thing. Also on the national front, a Harvard study, so not a bastion of conservatism, is now completely completely destroyed the gun control agenda. And based on their study, they have come to the conclusion that we all know on Patriot Radio that more guns equal less crime. Wow. Also on the national front, refugee resettlement. Through some investigative work that's being done by several people here in Washington and North Idaho, we have come to this conclusion. And this is going to be very interesting. So recently, everybody knows that Sheriff Knezovich intentionally said the constitutionalists were a greater threat than ISIS. And I couldn't figure out where this was coming from, because he wouldn't say something publicly like that unless he was trying to hang his hat on something. And then he compared constitutionalists and by implication Christians to ISIS. So did some research, and I found that NPR actually had one of the authors of a study by the New America Foundation. Okay, no relation to the New American Magazine, which is a wonderful publication. This is the New America Foundation. And the New America Foundation did this study that said there were twice as many right-wing acts of violence than there was Muslim terrorist acts of violence since 9/11. In fact, they only counted seven since 9/11. Now, obviously, for everybody listening, they're like, that's ridiculous. And it is ridiculous. Okay, but that was a study. And that is what study said, that right-wing extremists are a greater threat than ISIS. And so that's where Sheriff Knezovich got this from. National Public Radio, and this author of this study for the New America Foundation. Okay, so I did some more digging. Guess who funds the New America Foundation? George Soros, through the Open Societies. And that organization, by the way, you can find it all over the place. You find Open Societies, the Tides Foundation, those types of organizations. Those are George Soros organizations. So I found that I have the conclusive proof of that. I have the documentation that is who's financing it. So then I dug a little bit deeper into the whole refugee resettlement, because I thought it was really weird that right-wing people are being demonized, Christians are being demonized, and especially in comparison to Islamic terror. So I thought that was weird. So I started doing some digging, and somebody actually provided me this information. That the Idaho Office for Refugees, okay, this is a non-governmental organization in Idaho that's helping resettle the 2,000 refugees in Idaho, right near Twin Falls, actually, and Boise, okay? These are the ones that are helping with the Syrian refugee resettlement. It's not just Syria, there's more too, but from this Islamic area of the world. Okay, so the Idaho Office of Refugees. Okay, their parent organization is called Janus. Ironically, that actually is the Roman god with two faces. So very apropos in this particular situation. But Janus, and it was formerly, that company was actually formerly called Mountain States Group, okay? So Janus is the parent organization to the Idaho Office for Refugees. They have a contractual obligation, and I have the proof of this. It's actually on their own website. I pulled it off, snapshotted it so nobody could remove it. They have a contractual obligation with another group called IRC. Wow, what is IRC? It's the International Rescue Committee. So I did some digging there, and lo and behold, who funds the IRC? George Soros. So you have George Soros on one hand funding the demonization of Christians and patriots and constitutionalists on this issue of refugee resettlement, saying we're a greater threat. And then on the other side, actually funding the refugee resettlement itself. Don't hear that in the news, do you? Also on the national front, Treasury bonds selling at a 0% yield and China continuing to dump Treasury bonds at a record pace. That's just another indication things are not going well when you're selling bonds at 0%. We're going to talk about that a little bit later in the show. Also, border state sheriffs react to the release of 6,000 prisoners on the border. And they're saying, hey, we shouldn't release anybody, let alone illegal immigrants that have been in jail. And yet the administration is releasing these prisoners. And I got to tell you something, this is exactly what they do in communist countries when they're getting ready to do civil unrest. They will release prisoners into the normal populace to create chaos. It happened in 1917. This is a historical fact. It happened with Mao Zedong. And now we're seeing it happen here in the United States. And I got to ask, what's the agenda here? I have to ask this. Because you take that into context with what George Soros is doing funding these things. What is the context? All right. Also, on the regional front, Washington State House of Representatives actually hires a preparedness coordinator. So even the Washington State House of Representatives is preparing. Why aren't you? That's what we should be asking our friends and neighbors that are not prepared. And I just find it so ironic that preparedness is demonized, and yet the House of Representatives actually hired one. Also on the regional front, I want to address the down-and-out attitude that we have, that I've been hearing anyway, from some folks that, you know, all is lost, we can't win. Folks, look at William Wallace faced the greatest nation in the world at that time, Great Britain, and won with a small group of dedicated patriots that fought for freedom. George Washington did the same thing. Michael Collins in Ireland did the same thing. It takes a dedicated group of people to stand up and start running for all these local offices and defend freedom locally. Cemetery commission. Yeah, that's a local office you can run for. School board. Yeah, that's a local office you can run for. Folks, the reason that we're in the situation we're in is because we're not taking the ground back. We have got to physically show up and take the ground back. It's our ground. We need to own our own backyard. We start doing that, things will start turning around. And I don't care what's happening in Olympia or Washington, D.C. If we take care of our own backyard, we're going to be able to take care of each other and expand freedom. Also on the local front, October 27th, 6:30 p.m. here in at Green Bluff, actually, Tretzi Farm Winery. We're going to be doing the annual Freedom Rally fundraiser. Please check it out online. We have a limited number of seats left, but I want to make sure everybody knows about it. Check it out online. Look forward to seeing you there, and that's the briefing. Remember the antidote to dependency. And socialism is to be a God-fearing, self-reliant, freedom-loving American. Thank you to everybody that's been praying for Patriot Radio. Also, thank you to everybody that's been going to Facebook.com/Patriot Radio US and liking the page and sharing it with your friends and family. We've got a lot of recent support that's happened there, and thank you for doing that. Really appreciate that. And also, by the way, I have some late-breaking news. I just got this across the wire here real quick. It looks like Obama has vetoed the military defense bill. So now he's holding our army and military hostage. Interesting. Well, if you want to support Patriot Radio or you want to go sign up to be at the fundraiser, you can go to VoteShea.com. That's VoteShea.com. And you can support us there. Thank you very much to everybody that has. It keeps us on the air. And it allows us to bring you great guests like Pat Wood that we had on Tuesday. And my guest today a great patriot, somebody that has been literally fighting the fight behind the scenes where people don't even know she's fighting. And she actually lived in China, communist China, for a while. My great friend and 39th District State Representative and also candidate for Congress in the 1st Congressional District, Elizabeth Scott. Bitsy, how are you doing? It's great to have you on Patriot Radio.
Thanks for having me on today.
So, well, let's start with, I can't even keep up with the news that's coming in. My goodness gracious. It all seems to be negative. Let's start with Paul Ryan, I guess. You know, it seems like the Freedom Caucus was off to a great start. They had held together. They forced Boehner to resign. They forced McCarthy out. And then Paul Ryan says, you know, we have to come together or, you know, I'm not running and we're just going to be totally dysfunctional. And now some of the Freedom Caucus, unfortunately, looks like they've caved. Would you support Paul Ryan if you were elected to Congress in the 1st District?
No, I wouldn't. And there are several reasons, but the most recent reason is just how he's handled this very idea of him running, you know, by setting down parameters. I'll run if this happens and if that happens. And the most tyrannical thing that has me concerned is him saying that, you know, he would only run if they promised not to unelect him. And frankly, that's tyrannical because he would be running, you know, if he got elected and chosen by the House Republican Caucus, then that means that they've chosen him as their leader and for as long as he does the job well. But if he does something poorly, why should they lose their right to unelect him and replace him with someone who would do a better job? I mean, that's just not how we do things in America.
You know, a couple years ago, I was at the state convention and I watched as they tried to make us give a loyalty pledge to the party. And that kind of stuff scares me because that's exactly what they do in communist countries. We're not supposed to be loyal to a party. We're supposed to be loyal to the truth. And this bothers me. And you've seen that yourself. And that's kind of what I'm feeling from Paul Ryan.
Yeah, that's then that was a major red flag to me. I had some, you know, disagreements with him on some other things, but that right there sums it up that my misgivings were correct. You know, that he would just the power has gone to his head, and that is a huge red flag. You want to steer clear of people who look at other people as their underlings. You know, that's never a good situation.
Never a good situation at all, and. If you could, tell the listeners, let's back up a little bit. Tell listeners a little bit about your life in China and kind of some of the things you witnessed there and also why you're running for Congress this time around.
Sure. Well, in a nutshell, I was just talking about this the other day. I can smell tyranny a mile away. And the reason is that I spent 2 years in China from 1989 to 1991, right after the Tiananmen massacre. In fact, just a few months after that. And I was teaching English as a foreign language to university students and professors, and was based in Tianjin, which is a city of, at that time, it was 8 million people, the third largest city in China, 2 hours east of Beijing. And because it was so close to Beijing, most of my students had participated in the demonstrations. Some of them had lost siblings or friends, and it was a very tense time. In addition to that, the Chinese KGB, it's called the PSB, the Public Security Bureau, was based in Tianjin, where I was teaching, and so it was a very tense time. Our mail was opened, our rooms were bugged, our phones were bugged, our students were lied to. We had guards at the end of the hall and guards at the entrance to our building where all the foreign teachers were housed. And, you know, basically had to get permission to travel even a couple hours to Beijing to go shop for, say, cheese or a Rolling Stone magazine. So it was quite an eye-opener. And, you know, I grew up patriotic, but those 2 years really were a crash course in liberty versus tyranny and helped me understand not only that governments don't really give you rights, you know, you're born with rights. The founding fathers called them inalienable rights, those rights can be stepped on or squelched, you know, or smothered by tyrannical governments. And frankly, I'm seeing more and more of that happening here. And that is the reason that prompted me to want to run for first the State House and now Congress. I don't see that our freedoms are being protected appropriately.
And it seems like, too, that we have just a complete spiraling downward right now. I was looking at some of the stats that came out today on 45 million people on food stamps for 51 months or more. And we're talking 15. If we take the population of the U.S. at 310 million, we're talking 15% of the population's on food stamps. 15%.
That's horrific and so tragic. And it really doesn't have to be that way. You know, it's sad because we know that the many people on the left, you know, like in the State House, even we see this, you know, many of them have good hearts. They really do care about the poor. And many times they're trying to get to the same goal that we are, but they come at it from just a backwards, ineffectual way, and it doesn't work. So, for example, you know, in the 1960s, when the war on poverty was started, we started pouring millions and billions and now trillions into social programs to try to help the poor. And, you know, a couple years ago in 2010, I took a look at the total amount of spending. It was $14 trillion at that point. And the effect that it had had on poverty was minimal. I believe we had gone from 12.8% poverty to 12.5% with all that $14 trillion sucked out of the economy. And so it clearly doesn't do what it was designed to do. And right now it's even worse, you know, just fighting the statistics you just cited. It's worse. Now it's 15%, and what that means is families sitting around the kitchen table wondering how in the world they're going to make things work and getting depressed, and it's just very sad.
It is. One of the more alarming statistics is we have 95 million people out of work. You're talking a third of the country is not productive members of society. And right. I don't know of any country in history that's ever been able to survive that. What are your thoughts on that part of it, and how do we fix it?
Right. Well, for one thing, as we were talking about, you know, government has just gotten too big. So, for example, when you look at the percentage of a person's time that is spent just to pay for the different forms of government and the cost of regulations, you know, now the Tax Freedom Day is in late April, and it's just later every year. So what that means is people are basically spending a third of their working hours working just to fund government. And clearly that's stifling the economy. It throws a lot of people out of work. And then, you know, even the ones who aren't being counted, you know, they should be counted because it's a huge hole in productivity that we could be seeing. Not to mention, you know, it's just heartbreaking. I think to get things back on track, we need to get back to the Constitution. We need to get back to the proper role of government. And in Article 1, Section 8 in the U.S. Constitution, there's a very short list of what the federal government is supposed to be messing with. We've gone far beyond that. And you see it at every level of government, including state and county and on down to city, that it's just power goes to people's heads, and then they want to self-perpetuate their offices and expand their footprint, as it were. It's crippling.
It is, and I think that's really what the problem is. Is you know, people are, why won't they do the right thing? Why won't they do the right thing? Because they don't want to jeopardize their standing and the wonderful position they have at Congress and all the money that comes with it. They don't want to jeopardize any of that, so they don't do the right thing. Now, you're going to be taking, I've seen you work behind the scenes. I've seen you work on the floor. You're the same person behind closed doors as you are publicly. What are you going to take to Washington, D.C. as a congresswoman that will change that attitude? And hopefully, you know, you've already talked to guys like Thomas Massie who already kind of have that attitude in Washington, D.C.
Right. Well, I think, Matt, thanks for asking. I hear it. I even heard it today. I hear it from so many people that they find my approach refreshing. You know, they say what you say what you mean and you mean what you say, and we respect that about you. Just today I got an endorsement from a lady named Pam Fritchman, who's a firefighter in Darrington. She calls herself a liberal, She's probably an ex-hippie, walks around in tie-dye, and she's a very fun, artsy person, likes to create a lot of crafts, jewelry and photography and things like that. And she interestingly said to me, you know, you're the most liberal Republican I've ever met. And I just chuckled because her definition of liberal must be a little different from from mine. But I think what she meant was that I'm open-minded enough to listen to people and accept the people. You know, I see people as highly interesting and valuable, but that doesn't mean that I'm going to agree with you on everything. So it kind of struck me as odd, but I know that she respects that I'm hardworking, and then I tell people exactly what I think. The people in my district, the 39th, which is from Monroe to Cedro Woolley, are very independent. They vote for Republicans and Democrats up and down the ballot. And in 2012, I won with 53.5%. And then 2 years later, after having stuck to my promise of voting for smaller, smarter government, they reelected me, you know, gave me a 9-point lift to 62.6%. And I know that that was Democrats and independents coming on board and saying, hey, we really like what you're doing. I know we don't agree on every issue, but we can trust that you're going to do what you say you're going to do, which is ratchet government back to its proper role and stop seeing the taxpayers as bottomless ATMs.
It's interesting because a lot of taxpayers don't even realize they're that bottomless ATM. Because some of these taxes you don't really see, you know, you got to deal with it once a year. But what if you had to pay taxes every month,
right?
And you actually had to write that check? I mean, there'd be a totally different view of taxes in this country.
You're right, and I know some people, you know, there's been discussion about making it more apparent with gas taxes. You know, how much is actually taxed? A lot of taxes are quite hidden, and people don't realize what's going on. They don't realize that they're spending a third of their working hours just on tax and the cost of regulation. So, but they do know that something's wrong, horribly wrong, and everybody knows, hey, I've tightened my belt multiple times. Why can't I make ends meet? Why are things rising in cost? And why is government taking more and more when I seem to be taking home less and less from my paycheck? So I think people are realizing that it's a problem. A lot of people, unfortunately, don't know which, you know, even who to complain to. That's a fault of our education system, which frankly I think is intentional. The dumbing down of the population so that they don't know where to turn or how to fight back to reclaim lost ground and reclaim their liberty. So that's another piece of what I do because of my background as a teacher. I have a master's in teaching English as a foreign language and taught college ESL overseas for 5 years overseas and 5 years in the U.S., including 4 colleges in the Seattle area. And a lot of what I do as I'm speaking around the district is educate, letting people know how can you contact your legislator, you know, at the hotline, 1-800-562-6000, and who do you complain to about different things, and how do you get together to make things happen? How do you make change? So that is a fun part of what I get to do in this role as a legislator and a candidate for Congress.
Well, let's talk about the hidden tax, because you kind of alluded to it a little bit. Let's talk about inflation. Mm-hmm. And that is a really hidden tax. And I mentioned at the beginning of the show that now we have the Treasury selling 0% yield treasuries, 0% yield. In other words, there is no money being made off of it, but people are still buying them because it's a hedge against inflation. It actually will gain you money even though there's inflation. And where do you stand on that? And what is the solution to stopping this ridiculous tax of inflation?
Well, part of it is, and I know you'd agree with me, that we need to audit the Fed. We probably should get rid of the Fed, but we first need to audit it so that people understand what's going on with the manipulation of money. You know, why is it that when you read a children's book from just a few years ago, you know, the prices all seem horribly off, on how much it costs for penny candy. We don't even have penny candy anymore, right? or a candy bar for a nickel. We know that things are changing dramatically, but most people don't really understand why. They don't know about the federal government pumping money into the economy, and it's just paper money, really. It's monopoly money. It reminds me of those cartoons, you know, say Wile E. Coyote running off a cliff at full speed, and he runs for a little while in the air until suddenly he realizes he's in the air, and he looks down, and that's when he crashes. I kind of feel like our economy is like that. But right now, we're in that spot where we're running out off the cliff and in the air, but people haven't looked down yet. But when they do, it's going to be quite an ugly scene for a while. On a positive note, that may be the best time to fix things, because people will be desperate for answers, and they'll be looking to leaders who are bold enough to produce solutions that will actually work.
And I hope the American people are prepared for the solutions it's going to take to get us back on track. I think there's a lot of people, last three to five months, I've had so many people saying, okay, you guys were right. What do I do? Mm-hmm. You were right. You predicted it. I'm on board totally 100%. What do I do? And so that's encouraging to me, but it's not the vast majority of Americans. And that's where it really needs to be, to have that dramatic re-railing, if you will, to invent a word, putting us back on the right track, you know, instead of going down this road that we all know is going to end in failure with these socialist policies that always collapse on top of themselves. What is your experience talking to the folks around the state as well?
Well, you know, I have to say I'm encouraged by looking at history. So, you know, on the one hand, it's tempting to think we would need a majority of Americans to understand this and to put things in place, you know, in their own families and in their houses and their communities. But really, when we look at, say, early American history around the Revolutionary time, you know, at the time, about a third of the country said, all right, this is enough. Let's break away from England. And about a third of them said, no, things are fine. Let's stay with England. Yeah, I think it's all right. We can tolerate this. And another third said, you know what, would you just shut up, stop arguing, and let me farm already? I mean, this is annoying. So the people who actually brought about the change, that is, in that case, by taking up arms, was only around 3%, 3 to 5%. So it was a very small amount. The truth of the matter is there are a lot of people out there who would like to just be farming, you know, just taking care of their families, taking care of their business, and they're happy to have leaders who take charge, and they want that. Then there are those people who will disagree, but there are also some, and I think there are enough now, who will agree with what needs to happen in order to bring our economy back under control, make the dollar based on sound policy again, and just get rid of this debt. I mean, over $18 trillion now, 18.4. I think there are enough people who will get with the program, if you will, that we can make it happen. It won't be painless, but I think another thing, people do realize that we've kind of lost a sense of community, and I think government has triggered that, you know, by, let me just give you an example, if I may. When I was, you know, my first marriage was very abusive, and I finally got out of that after 6.5 years and was raising my little boy on my own, and things were very difficult. And I remember an awkward conversation with my father one month when I had very little money left in the checking account and nothing in savings, and I was embarrassed, you know, to be asking him for a little help. And embarrassed that we were using the county clinic for healthcare. We were uninsured. And my father said, oh, don't worry about it. You've paid into the system. You'll get to a point again where you're paying into it again. And this is what the government programs are here for, times like this. And I just thought, well, I don't that doesn't make sense to me. Like, isn't it better for a family to help than government? And the more I thought about it, the more I thought, well, this is ridiculous. Basically, government, and I mean no disrespect to my father, who's a wonderful man, but government had incentivized him to not chip in by saying, well, don't worry, government will handle it. That's when you know it's gone too far. I mean, the government help should be a very last resort if it's there at all. And the family, the community, the church or synagogue should be the first levels of assistance. Right now, they're not. Right now, the government is the first, middle, and last level of assistance. And that's a huge problem. I think when some of that is by necessity after an economic crash, it was ratcheted back, people will rediscover the joy of community and the joy of giving to your neighbor personally and receiving.
Well, and that's something that I like to say always, is you can't love your neighbor if government's doing it for you. And that's really one of the things that I think has created the attitude we have in society, is we weren't forced to love our neighbor. We weren't forced to learn what was going on with them next door. Well, this is Matt Shea on Patriot Radio with Elizabeth Scott, 39th District State Representative and also candidate for Congress, and hopefully going over there to join the Freedom Caucus. So, Elizabeth, we were talking a little bit about, you know, the 95 million people out of work, talking about the economy and 0% bonds and the hidden tax inflation. I want to shift gears a little bit into something that you know a lot about, and that's education. Common Core, mm-hmm. funded by people that are not friends of freedom and liberty,
right?
Promoted by people that are not friends of freedom and liberty. What do you think we need to do to stop it, and what's your view on everything that's going on with Common Core?
All right, so here's some encouraging news. Things are happening at the state level here in Washington State. I believe that we will see movement of the anti-Common Core bills in January again. You remember right at the end of session before policy bill cutoff, several bills were proposed, but there wasn't time to get them heard in committee. Those bills will be brought forward again and reintroduced in January. In the Senate, we have a bill that's co-sponsored by a Republican and a Democrat. That's Senator Pam Roach and Senator Marilyn Chase. And the two of them co-sponsored a bill for a full repeal of Common Core and all its testing. In the House, I have a similar bill that's also for a full repeal of Common Core. That's House Bill 2167, I believe it, or 2165. In addition to that, I have another bill that's for opt-out. It basically requires that parents be notified of their right to opt their children out. And that bill will also be reintroduced. So we've got several good ones going through the system here, and I'm hopeful because there will be some shakeup kind of in the Education Committee, at least over the next couple of years, and some of the people who've been blocking the Common Core bill, the anti-Common Core bills, because they support big data, some of those people are moving on to other things. So because of that, I think there's a higher chance within the next definitely within the next 2 years that that we would be able to repeal Common Core in our state. You know, you got to wonder, if the Democrat PCOs voted already for a kind of a memorandum saying that they don't like Common Core, don't support it, and if the Republican PCOs voted all the way to the national level on a memorandum saying they don't support it, then who exactly is supporting it? We know the parents don't like it, the students don't like it. A lot of the teachers now are speaking up that they don't like it. So it's all about big data. And frankly, some of these people are just looking at our children as meat. They're looking at them as just numbers and profits to be made. And that is sick. That doesn't help anybody. It doesn't help our society, and it certainly doesn't help our children get a better education.
Well, George Soros and Bill Gates certainly are trying to define the next 20 years as being controlled by the new resource information. And we've seen it not only with school records and all of these databases to input into, you know, everything from, do you have any veterans in your household, to, You know, were you ever disciplined for pulling Sally's ponytail in kindergarten? Yeah. But it goes even farther than that. All of the social media monitoring that's happening, the drone use. In fact, they just came out today. The FBI just came out today and admitted that it was using aerial surveillance in Ferguson. And then we have on top of that, all of the NSA wiretapping without warrants. Mm-hmm. All of this stuff is going on to compile these massive databases, an individual profile on you, where they almost know you better than you know yourself, and they can advertise to you and they can market to you. And with what just got disclosed over the summer and this is very important, activity-based intelligence, or ABI, they can actually create the profile in such a way that they can use information with you to elicit a specific response. In other words, they can manipulate your own behavior, and they're literally going toward that with activity-based intelligence. What is if you are in Congress, and I fully expect you will be in Congress, mm-hmm. if you're there, how do you stop all of that? And what is your take on this whole surveillance state that's being built?
Well, you know, my interest in student data privacy, this has been something that I've focused on for a while. So, you know, obviously one of the biggest problems and biggest instigators of this is crony capitalism. You have bills that go through that are pushed by big donors at both at the federal and the state level, and then people give in to the pressure because they want the check at the end during their campaigns, and then the government kind of pulls strings and tweaks things to give advantages to certain companies. This is a bad thing. This is a very destructive thing, and one example of that that needs to be changed, that I would work on changing right away, is the FERPA law that was changed by the Department of Education without even running it past Congress. That it needs to be changed back the way it was. The FERPA law is a student privacy law, and unfortunately, just a few years ago, it was widened and broadened so wide you could drive a truck through it. It basically now allows the sharing of student data, and by that I mean personally identifiable data, not only academic data, not how a class did or how your kid did on tests, but also things like discipline, you know, suspensions, expulsions, you know, like even the kid who got suspended for chewing his Pop-Tart in the shape of a gun, that actually is in a federal database. I know that because it's required for every suspension or expulsion, it's required that that information be uploaded into the federal database. And so that FERPA law needs to be tightened up again so that the sharing of that data can no longer take place with private companies, and also so that that data cannot be shared without at least first letting the parents know which data is being collected and with whom it's being shared. Right now, we know at the state level that our P20 database, that's a preschool to 20th grade database, was shared with the Seattle Times. And when the Office of Superintendent of Public Instruction was asked about it by KUOW, a news station here, the Office of Superintendent of Public Instruction said, well, we consider Seattle Times to be a research organization, which means that it would be allowed under FERPA. So we're in total compliance with the law, they said. Well, that's ridiculous. Every parent knows that, that's not right. You shouldn't be sharing our kids' data. And we also know from all the data breaches that have happened around the country and around the world, you know, they're happening every day to huge companies and huge banks. Do we really think that our Department of Education here in the state has stricter, tighter controls around the privacy of our data than those big companies? No way. So it all.
Well, they're too busy investigating football coaches, Betsy. They've got a lot of other things to do.
Yeah, that too, yeah. It all comes down to the fact that all data that's being collected can and will be leaked or stolen. I mean, that's just where we are, right? Let's just face facts. So therefore, let's stop collecting such micro detailed data on every student It's not necessary. And you remember when we looked up how many times the word database occurred in proposed legislation, was that last year? It was hundreds of times, hundreds of bills where they wanted to expand the collection of data on people for different types of databases. It's just horrifying. Now, not all those bills made it into law, but it shows the trend, right? And there's no way to keep it all totally locked up and safe. It's just, that's not reality. So therefore, I believe that we need to stop collecting it.
Well, and if you look at all the technology that's coming out right now, all of it is focused on collecting more data of yours. You know, smart grid technology, smart meters, mm-hmm. all of these things are part of collecting more data about you, and which is a great segue into the next thing that I wanted to talk about, and that's Agenda 21, which is now, by the way, Agenda 2030, because they had to extend it 15 years. But Agenda 2030 and this whole idea of sustainable development and private property rights, we've got Lavoie Finchem down in Arizona looking like it's shaping up to be another Bundy Ranch scenario. We've got other ranchers across the West that have faced the wrath of BLM. What's your take on that, and how do you think you could correct it if you're in Congress?
Well, I think that, you know, I want to go back to something you said a little bit ago, that that the collecting of the data, I think with the smart grid technology, for example, it's not really about collecting the data, it's about controlling people. So the fact of the matter is they will eventually use that technology to control who has access to power and when. But that being said, let's go on to the BLM issues. And the control of land. We know that at the federal level, that they own only about 2% or less of the land in the states that are east of the Mississippi. But out here out west, it's as high as 50% of the land is owned by the federal government. And that is something that needs to change. We've seen legislation from different states, particularly Utah and Colorado, move forward saying, you know, frankly, we're grown-up states now. We would like to have control of our land back to the state level. And I would push in, I will push in Congress for that land to be given back to the states to control. Now, is that a panacea? Is that an easy fix? No, because you do have some states, like here in Washington, where even the state does not do a great job with the land that it controls. So you would also need to fix, you know, who's in power here at the state level. But you have to do these things, you know, one step at a time. The first thing that needs to happen is that the federal government gives most of the federally controlled land back to the state. And then the people can put pressure on their state legislators to fix, and their agencies to fix what's going on at the state level. But since government works best when it's closest to the people it represents, that's what needs to happen first.
And we have this other problem, too, that we're facing, you know, with wildfires and the total mismanagement of our national forests. And most of these fires are starting on either Forest Service land or state land. Then they're spreading to private land because they've completely locked these vast swaths of forest down. And ironically, the DNR had to open their forests up for logging because of the fires. The logging mills up here in Northeast Washington are booming. Right. I think they're going 24/7 now. They've ramped up because they have to take in and all that salvaged timber from the fires. Can't we better manage our forests? And what do you think is the solution besides transferring land down the states where we can actually make sure that these forests are better managed?
Right. Well, you know, it was interesting during this this summer with all the horrific fires that were going on in Washington State. Your listeners may have looked up a map of where all the fires were, it showed the fires in Canada as well, and it was just a dramatic difference as you looked around the border area of how many fires there were, you know, acreage were burning in Canada versus how many were burning here. So clearly, it wasn't only because of climate or, you know, a drought or lightning strikes or something like that. Clearly, it was policy-driven, or you wouldn't have seen such a clear line between the number of fires in Canada and the number of fires here. So clearly, the policies are probably micromanaging, you know, and overregulating what's happening in the state and, or sorry, in the federal forest lands. I think that things that need to change are that we need to allow more logging and cutting out of the undergrowth. Sometimes we need to allow natural fires to burn in some areas to let it clear out. But the fact that they've not been doing that has allowed bugs and things to you know, manifest themselves and spread, those red beetles, for example. And that that ends up killing so many trees that then all it takes is one lightning strike and you've got a huge forest fire on your hands.
That's exactly right, and that's exactly what we saw happen. Okay, in the last few minutes that we have left, if people want to get involved and help you out, especially because you're on the west side of the state, so the state that, mm-hmm. you know, everybody over here in eastern Washington thinks, my goodness gracious, is there anybody that's conservative over there? And yes, there is, you. So how can people help you out, and what can they do to get involved just on that side of the state, or maybe sure. tell their friends and relatives about it as well?
Well, thanks for asking. Of course, you know, when we're on Facebook, I mean, it would be great if you'd come like my page. It's called Elizabeth Scott for Congress. And if you can like that and ask your friends to like it, that'd be great. The website is ElizabethScottForCongress.com. And we are having some fundraisers, of course. You can also donate through the website. We've already raised over $60,000 from over 220 grassroots donors. Of course, we got a long way to go. We recognize it's going to cost over $1 million to beat Susan Bill Benning, and she basically has bottomless pockets. So we're going to have to do it with a grassroots effort, which we can do. We're already rolling, and of course, the election is not until next year. In addition to that, if you can gather up some volunteers to come over and doorbell next spring and summer, that'd be fantastic. We'd love to have you, and we'll put you to work. And that's about it for now, but I appreciate you asking.
Absolutely. And on the Internet, if you can plug your website.
Yes, ElizabethScottForCongress.com.
ElizabethScottForCongress.com. In the last couple minutes we've got, any final thoughts for the youth out there, the young people that would be listening to Patriot Radio today?
Absolutely. To the youth, I would say, you know what, please take your education in your own hands and learn as much as you can about the proper role of government. I would start with a book called The Law by Frederick Bastiat. It's a free download online at bastiat.org. And it is a nice little succinct description of the proper role of government, what government should be doing and what it can do well. That's a great way to start. In addition to the youth, I would say, you know, pay attention. Make friends some of the local, you know, politicians or electeds online on Facebook, and then you can follow what they're doing, what they talk about. It's a great way to learn about the issues. And then, of course, attending some of your local meetings like school board or city council is another great way to just start to get a feel for who's in charge of what and, therefore, who to complain to when things go wrong. Who knows? You might get the political bug yourself and decide to throw your hat in the ring and be part of the solution. So really want to encourage all the young listeners out there to stay involved and keep your chin up. This is fixable. We've been in worse messes than we are today, and we can fix this, but we're going to need your help.
Those are really wise words. You know, as we talked about earlier, you know, it seems like you need this vast majority of Americans to turn things around, but that's really not true. You don't. You just need that committed minority of people that are willing to stand fast and not waver, and you're one of those people, and I'm proud to call you my friend.
Thank you. Feeling is mutual.
Well, keep up the great work, Elizabeth Scott, 39th District State Representative. We'll have you back on again, and boy, give them heck over there on the west side of the state. You're right in the lion's den, so whatever we can do to help you out, okay?
Yeah, for all your prayer warriors out there, keep praying for us too, because this is more a spiritual battle than anything else. So God bless you all for everything you're doing.
All right, indeed. Take care. Elizabeth Scott, 39th District State Representative, also candidate for Congress. ElizabethScottForCongress.com, and we'll post that up there on the Patriot Radio Facebook page as well, so you can take a look at everything that she stands for. She's been an intimate and integral part of the Freedom Agenda team, really fighting the fight over there. A couple of her bills were getting massive national news coverage as well. Just always great to have a fighter. And for those folks that are listening right now, yes, there are conservatives on the west side of the state, and they are principled conservatives and will stand on principle regardless of what's going on around them. And for all you young people listening, wise words by Elizabeth, get involved. It's the best way to do things. And she didn't say this, but I will. If you have the opportunity in your life to actually go overseas outside of America, maybe go to China, maybe go to the Middle East, maybe go to Europe, Eastern Europe, and see the way the rest of the world actually lives and works and survives, you'll have a brand new appreciation for America. So all of you young folks listening right now, maybe decide where you want to go in the world. And it doesn't have to be with the military. It could be with the Peace Corps. It could be with something else. It doesn't have to be, you know, some formal thing. Just go see the way the rest of the world really is and why America is so special. Why freedom creates prosperity. And why, as Christians, spreading the gospel of Jesus Christ, making disciples, teaching people how to obey his commands, loving the Lord our God with all our heart, mind, body, soul, and spirit, and loving our neighbors as ourselves, why that is more able to be done in a free, a truly free country. And that's the brilliance of it, because all of these refugees resettling, they couldn't have religious freedom anywhere in the world except here. And maybe in places in Western Europe, but even then, they're cracking down on it. So keep that in mind as well when you think about America. Well, thank you to everybody for joining me on Patriot Radio today. God bless all of you, and may you make this generation the greatest one.